Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
What's savant syndrome?
The mystery of savant syndrome. Coexisting intellectual disability or a brain injury of some sort and a superpower. He's memorized all the buildings, windows, trees, Central Park. He lays it out. He's not referring to a photo during this. He's all downloading this from his brain.
Incredible what we're able to do with our brain.
He has a repertoire of about 10,000 songs. He can't see the piano at all, so he's doing it all from his auditory and sense memory.
Wow.
One individual got struck by lightning, and they immediately gain, inexplicably, some gift in music or art, and they have this compulsion. They can't stop doing it.
It's almost becoming supernatural.
If you ask them, how are you doing this? I don't know. I just know it. I just remember it. It just happens. They're not limited in a certain way by what we do.
How the brain is able to access these parts that research even hasn't been able to.
You or I or anyone in the world could kind of become savants.
Jeremy, thank you for being real, raw, and authentic. I'm super interested in a topic that you're not just passionate, but also an expert in. Jeremy, what's savant syndrome? Please share.
Okay,
shed some light.
Some people may have heard of the movie Rain Man that came out about 30 years ago that featured Dustin Hoffman playing an individual with autism who had concurrent gifts. He was able to count matchsticks that spilled out on the floor immediately. He was able to memorize facts and dates and things like that with an extraordinary ability to do that, but he had the coexisting disability. A savant is an individual with a coexisting intellectual disability or a brain injury of some sort and a superpower, whether that's memory, artistic gifts, musical gifts, so on and so forth. And these are very incredibly rare individuals. It's a beautiful example of the mystery of the human brain. And it's something that is a very, very niche topic, as you would imagine. Not everybody has heard of it, but we might have heard of somebody who has savant syndrome. Okay.
What are the early signs of savant syndrome?
Yeah. So first of all, as I mentioned, there has to be some sort of a disability from the beginning. Oftentimes it's autism, but it can be any other neurodevelopmental condition, or some people have an injury at birth or a genetic abnormality. And the early signs, honestly, are the typical thing we hear is we got him a toy piano for his third birthday, and all of a sudden we were doing the dishes in the kitchen and we heard music coming from the living room and he was playing a song perfectly. And, or we got him some pencils and crayons and all of a sudden, you know, he or she was there making beautiful artwork. So it's really an unexpected gift that the parent usually discovers when they expose their child to a certain form of creativity, or of course, exceptional math skills, or somebody who can remember everything that happened to. So as soon as you start to see this, incredible gift that stands in contrast with their overall disability, that's when you start to wonder, does this person have savant syndrome? And one other thing I'll say is that a lot of it has to do with the disparity between their overall level of function and the extent of their gift. And so the person who is the leading expert in the topic of savant syndrome in terms of research and stuff. And this is where, if I can share the screen, I can start kind of showing you some of these different tabs and the actual people who tell the story of this. So Dr. Darrell Treffert, and I'm showing you his Wikipedia page, was the really expert and leading thought leader on savant syndrome. Here he is with a puppet that we made for him. He is from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, which is actually where I'm sitting right now. He is a child psychiatrist, and he opened a children's mental health unit in a hospital, and he first discovered that some of the people, for instance, who had autism could memorize the entire bus schedule of the city. And you could tell them at an intersection, and they'd tell you what time and what bus would be there at that time. And it was these, he called them islands of genius, meaning that in an otherwise disabled brain, there was a tiny little island of genius in their brain. And it was kind of inexplicable. And he wondered how it happened. And he started to do research. He built a registry of savants. He opened up something called the Treffert Center here in Wisconsin. And for several decades, he met all of these incredible savants who I'm going to show you about over the coming half hour or so. And he became kind of the name, the authority on savant syndrome. He wrote articles. He described different levels of savant syndrome, different types of it. And that was the story there. Now, the way that I fit into this puzzle personally is I was kind of a fan of savant syndrome. I remember 20 years ago coming across videos of some of the people I'm going to show you on YouTube, even before I was thinking about going to medical school. I'd send them to my family and friends. I'd say, oh my God, look at this person. How do they do this? How do they have this ability? And fast forward, Caroline, several years to when I was in psychiatry residency, it popped into my mind. I said, whatever happened, I wonder if anyone's written a book about savant syndrome, because it's so fascinating to me. I'm interested in the human brain to begin with, as evidenced by our other discussions we've had. And so I looked it up on Amazon, and there was this person named Daryl Treffert, who was he'd written a couple books about islands of genius and savant syndrome and this rare phenomenon. And I read the book, and I saw about the author page at the end, and it said he lives in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Now, I was living in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, less than an hour away by car. And I thought, the world leader in this very rare topic lives 50 minutes away from me by car? This is incredible. And so I looked him up. I got to meet him. I sat down with him for a couple hours. We talked about the human brain and the mysteries of it. He was 85 or 86 at the time. And as he watched me out of the Treffert Center, he said, well, Jeremy, you know, getting kind of old here. I'm gonna need to hand the baton off to someone soon. And next thing you know, over the coming year or two, I was hired out of training as the medical director here at the Treffert Center. So I'm trying to fill his shoes at this point. Now he's passed away over the past handful of years, about 5 years ago. So I'm left trying to carry on this legacy along with a team of amazing people here. And so we are the hub of savant syndrome. So as you'd imagine, through our website, we hear from people all around the world, and it's treffertcenter.com. I can send you the link later. We get these emails. My son can do this. My daughter can do this. I can do this. And they're looking for guidance. And we get on a call with them, and we learn more about their skills and their gifts. And we say, well, here's some thoughts that we have for you. Here's how to make the most of it. Here's how you can help your child build a career around their gift and become financially independent. And the more we started to talk to these people, and we have lists, Caroline, of hundreds of them, and each of their skills and each of their stories that are all beautiful. And I thought a couple years ago, why are we keeping them away from each other? A lot of them ask us, can you introduce me to anyone else like me? And so we thought, why don't we build an event where we bring them all together and let them meet each other and share their gifts with the world? And that's exactly what we did. And last summer, we had the first archipelago. Archipelago is a collection of islands, right? So if you take islands of genius from around the world and we bring them together, it would be an archipelago. So we had that here in Wisconsin. We had a show. We had an art gallery where people could go up to different booths and interact with the artists. We had a lot of the musicians perform. It was an incredible event. And we're doing it again next month on July 10th here in Wisconsin, Archipelago 2026. So we're bringing them together, and it's a chance for them to meet someone who can understand them in a way that nobody else in the world can. We're very excited about that, obviously. And it's a truly remarkable event to see them all in one place. All right, I'll stop and let you ask any questions you have as I open up some more websites here.
Jeremy, I'm curious, people who have the savant syndrome, and for everyone who doesn't know exactly what comes with the syndrome, are there any, I'm trying to use the right words, downsides to this? Is their life impacted in some ways that they need support?
This is actually why I thought this would be a great topic for us to talk about, because I know you talk a lot about trauma and resilience. And as you could imagine, somebody who has a disability automatically has some huge barriers and challenges. So Tony DeBlois, who you're able to see him right now, right, on the screen?
Mm-hmm.
So this man was born, he had an anoxic brain injury. He had oxygen issues to his brain. He ended up completely blind and severely intellectually disabled. His communicative skills are limited, and he's completely dependent upon his mother. But she got him a piano to help him learn to sit up because he had struggles with his posture as well. And she discovered all of a sudden that he was playing piano. And brilliantly, he was playing, you know, TV show themes that he heard and stuff like that. He was still a small child. So she cultivated this gift. And that's the centerpiece about this, Caroline, is that it's all about exposing them to as many different things as possible. And when you discover a strength, you lean into that and build upon that strength. So Tony played more and more piano, and he didn't speak until he was in his teenage years. He learned to speak by singing the lyrics of popular music. And through that, he gained English language skills. She ended up sending him to Berklee College of Music, a very competitive musical school here in the States. He graduated near the top of his class with a degree in music and piano. And at this point, he has a repertoire of about 10,000 songs that you can make a request and he can play them immediately. And basically, if he hears a song, he can play it right back after hearing it one time. So he has an incredible, wow, inexplicable ability. You can play with him any random melodies, and his ear is able to understand them perfectly. And again, like I said, he can't see the piano at all. So he's doing it all from his auditory and sense memory. I actually sat him down here. This is him after he did a performance for us. And I spent about an hour. I just threw every song at him I could possibly think of. At, you know, disco, boy bands, old classical songs, classic rock songs, Kermit the Frog song, everything I could think of. I want you to have a sense of how quickly he just launches into stuff.
Are there so many songs about rainbows? Was only ours flying?
And then I would say some other song.
Why do birds sing so gay? Loving until the break of day. Why do they fall in love?
Wow.
I think you get the idea, Carolyn. It's immediate recall and performance of the song. And you could tell him whatever your favorite songs and artists are, chances are if it's from the last 7 or 8 decades, he'll be able to do it for you.
Wow.
So he's an example of somebody who overcame obvious hurdles, you know, intellectual disability. His mother was such a huge advocate for him, and she broke down a lot of barriers. They weren't going to allow him to go to that College of Music because of his disabilities, but she insisted and made the case for him, and they took him in there, and he did a wonderful job. Now, his dream, by the way, is to be a performer on a cruise ship. He wants to be on a holiday cruise boat, a Carnival cruise boat, and be the piano player on there. So we're working on that. But again, their policies is every one of our employees has to be able to do life rescue in case of emergency, which he would not be able to do. So we're in the situation here where we're trying to advocate and help the world that is not made for him work around him. And he is just, I mean, he's an incredible human being. We actually had the History Channel and William Shatner did a piece about us, and I got to show off Tony in that piece. I got to tell them all about Savant syndrome. I got to sit down and, by the way, Tony plays about 20 musical instruments, and he doesn't see any of them, of course. Here's how he plays guitar.
Hairman also has some sort of an island of genius that stands in...
You notice he lays it across his lap. He's an example of a piano savant. Now, I have to tell you that there are multiple piano savants who we work with. This is a man named Derek Pervicini. He's in London, also fully blind, and very similar to Tony DeBlois. And he can play songs. The first time he hears them, he has perfect pitch, and he can replicate them immediately. Here is another boy. I say boy. He's about 30 now. His name is Rex Lewis Clack, also fully blind. They all have autism. Every one of these people had all the barriers of autism and limited cognitive ability. If you watch them talk, you can tell they have almost scripted conversations. And every case, there is a mother or father or teacher or someone who is their close advocate who is helping them navigate the world despite their enormous disabilities that they have and build full lives out of them. All these people have been featured on TV shows and documentaries, and they perform all around the world. These people will be coming together.
Jeremy, how many people do have the Savant syndrome? Is there an official number?
So that's a great question, because that's one of the few places where I disagree with my mentor. So Dr. Treffert, so first of all, it's important to know there's different levels, so to speak. It's not a strict criteria, but he talks about people who have splinter skills. That's like someone with autism who's really interested in boats or trains or is really good at math and can tell you a lot of facts about that theme. They have a deep, narrow interest. That would be their island of genius. And it's really remarkable. Then there are talented savants where their skills are particularly a large difference between their skill level and their other challenges, okay? Then you have prodigious savants, which is people who are so good at what they do that they're as good as any non-disabled person. So Tony, who I showed you, for example, is someone, he's as good as any piano player who doesn't have autism. These are people who are the best in the world. And I'm going to show you some visual artists in a moment, too, that are prodigious savants. Now, Dr. Treffert felt that there were fewer than 100 living prodigious level savants on Earth. I think there's maybe more on the scale of thousands, if not more. And the reason is because Dr. Treffert, in his career, he was handwriting letters to these people. He was corresponding with them in very limited ways. Towards the end of his life, email became a thing. Now we have TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. And of course, it's much easier for people to reach out to us and for us to reach out to other people, and they can find us. So people who are in a country that didn't have a lot of resources before now can find their way to us, which is brilliant. And we're finding that, frankly, there are a lot more of them out there than we suspected, which is an exciting thing. And I would love anyone seeing this, if you know anybody, you know, we want to circulate this as far and wide as possible because we want to help these people. Here's the other thing, Caroline, you only know you have it if you discover the talent. And you only discover the talent if you were exposed to something. If Tony's mother had not purchased that piano for him, we might never know about his gift. So I have to imagine there are people maybe right there in your country or your city where they would have an amazing gift if only they knew about it. And that's why we opened Treffert Studios here. So I'm on the website for our page. This is a brand new facility that we opened a few years ago here that is part mental health treatment clinic, where I see people with ADHD and autism and anxiety disorders and everything. But we also have a full studio in the building here, a production studio where we have all the musical instruments you could imagine, all the art supplies you could imagine. And so we can expose people to those on purpose, and we can help them discover their gifts and then build out from there so they can overcome their disabilities.
Jeremy, for parents who are wondering right now,
yes,
how can I try and see if my child has Savant syndrome? Mm-hmm. What musical instruments or what should they expose their young child to?
As many as possible, because you never know. Some people are piano people. Some people are guitar people. Some people, like I said, are art people. You just keep trying and see what they tend to gravitate towards. Piano is one that we see a lot of. And I think it's possibly because there's that, it's that objective, like pitch by pitch thing. And each note corresponds to a different pitch. And if they have perfect pitch, they can map it out onto the piano very well. It's very mathematical. It's very memory based. And so it's easy to play. It's difficult to master, but it's not like a complicated reed instrument or a brass instrument where you have to be able to blow it the right way or hold it the right way. Piano, once your fingers figure out how to press the keys, they can do the rest of the work. So I highly recommend something like a piano, a toy piano or something like that. And then to answer your other question, you look at what they find themselves doing. And so for that purpose, I want to share with you another person named Grant Manier, okay? He's a man with autism. Mm-hmm. He's in his 20s right now. He might have just turned 30. When he was a child, when he would get overwhelmed by sensory noises and stuff like that, he would tear shreds of paper up. That was his coping mechanism. That was what made him feel calm. That's how he regulated. His mom said, wait a minute. Her name's Julie. What if we make some artwork out of all this paper you're tearing up. And so he became Jigsaw Grant. Now, Jigsaw, because he uses jigsaw puzzles, he uses the puzzle pieces for a lot of his artwork. And so this is what he does now. Now, all the pieces you see here are made out of, he tears the paper off of the jigsaw puzzle and he makes a collage out of it. So these are not puzzles. These are all made of torn shreds of paper or puzzle pieces. And so this is an example of a dog. These are tiny little shreds of paper. This dragon, these little silver scales are contact lens tin foils. And his gold head is made of discarded beads and necklace pieces. And then this gorilla is puzzle pieces and tiny shreds of paper. So he makes commissioned artwork, he makes original pieces, and he calls himself an eco-artist because he uses a lot of discarded objects to make his collages. So again, Mom noticed his leaned into what he was doing to account for his disability. And they said, how can we make something beautiful out of this? Now they have books that they sell, Jigsaw Grant, and they have all these different characters in the books. And they've raised a whole bunch of money with his art shows and stuff. So he's another example of someone where parents have to look at what their child is doing and say, how can we create a world where they get to do what they're drawn towards and connect with people from there? Let's get them a mentor. Let's find a drawing or art group. And let's, of course, contact the Trefford Center and we can provide guidance too. You don't want them sitting around in your house and just, if they're playing video games or watching TV over and over, what are they drawn towards? And you want to encourage them to be creative, because most people have some sort of island of genius that just has to be discovered.
Does everyone with Savant syndrome have autism underneath it?
Great question. So part of the definition is you have a disability. About half of the people who have Savant syndrome who we've encountered have autism. But you could have Down syndrome. You could have other developmental disorders. And then we're discovering a larger group that we call acquired savants, which is people who, like you or me, were normal, so to speak, typical, and didn't have any disability growing up, but then incurred a brain injury of some sort. Maybe they were they dove into a swimming pool and hit their head on something, or they had a stroke or a seizure, and one individual got struck by lightning. And after this happened, they immediately gain, inexplicably, some gift in music or art, and they have this compulsion. They can't stop doing it. And it's also debilitating, causes a lot of trauma because their job starts to suffer. They can't keep going to work, or their relationships suffer because they can't stop doing watercolor painting or whatever it is. They're obsessed with their new gift. And what that suggests is that all of us may have something lying dormant within our brains that we don't have access to. And when we have an injury of some sort, it's like, it unlocks a bridge to something that was there all along, and we just lost track of it. So it's a really wild concept to think. But many of them do have autism, and those are the ones who I wanted to share with you today.
Does research show what part of the brain is also then impacted?
Another great question. So when the History Channel came into the feature, they asked about the neuroanatomy as well. So one thing we see is oftentimes there's injury or damage to the left frontal areas of the brain, and that's some of the part of our brain that governs communication, normal social interactions, which is why people struggle with that. And sometimes there's compensation on the right part of the brain, which often governs creativity and things like art and music and gifts of that nature. So there is some thought about, is the brain compensating in some way for what was damaged in a different part of it? I'll also tell you that another theory we have is that as we grow up, we lose the ability to do certain things. So as we learn language, a lot of our brain is focused on vocabulary and grammar and reading people's facial expressions and intonations as we speak. That takes up a lot of brain power. And somebody who didn't get burdened by those things might have more room to do something else and see the world in a different way. Or some of the mathematics savants, where they can instantly calculate, large-scale division and multiplication problems, well, they didn't learn math the traditional ways in school that we do, and so they're not limited in a certain way by we do. If we take piano lessons, you learn about the scales and you learn about how to read the notes, and people who are savants do it in a completely different way. So their brains are kind of like on a different operating system that's uninhibited in the way that ours are inhibited. And so these acquired savants, when they have damage to their brain, it's almost as like they lose this inhibition and they gain a bridge back to a whole island or a whole town of their brain that was there all along that just couldn't be accessed. And that's the theory of how they can regain it so quickly.
That's fascinating. Can we, as not injured, not like say brain injured human beings, can we access or build that bridge? Is there anything that research is also trying to find right there?
We are. And we don't want to have to get, you know, beaten up with a baseball bat to the head in order to gain these skills, right? It would be fascinating if there's another way to do it. Some people with psychedelic or some substances that you expose the brain to seems to unlock some things like this. Also, there's an imaging form that's an intervention oftentimes called TMS, transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is a non-invasive mm-hmm. technique where you put magnets towards the scalp and you can aim a magnetic force at certain parts of the brain, and it's used in depression and anxiety disorders and a wide variety of other purposes. But they have found that when they aim it at certain areas, it seems to temporarily unlock exceptional gifts. And when they remove the magnet, it's gone. So it's almost like they're activating certain networks that we don't normally use. And so that might be a non-invasive way for us to unlock this. But then that brings together a whole nother ethical question, because can you imagine what would happen if you or I or anyone in the world could kind of become savants and gain all this, you know, knowledge or ability? It could be beautiful. It could also be overwhelming perhaps too.
Wow. It's almost becoming supernatural.
It is. And we were actually contacted by a podcast called The Telepathy Tapes, which is a pretty large podcast a couple of years ago. And they wanted to talk to us because for them, the savant syndrome is as mysterious as something like the existence of telepathy between people. Now, I don't have my own take on that. I'm focused on the savant syndrome stuff. But the point is, it's a mystery as to how it works. And there's something there that we don't quite understand. I would love to show you a couple other of these individuals. So this is Remrov. His name is Casey, and he's a 50-year-old man-ish with autism. He does these with pencils. So what you're looking at are pencil sketches of animals. And of course, they're photorealistic.
It's mind-blowing.
It's mind-blowing, absolutely. And, you know, he does the colors of it. He also does some buildings and stuff. So, you know, you can find these people on social media. Here's one of his skyline pieces. He spends months on these, and they're huge canvases. And, of course, he has massive amounts of detail. It's just incredible what he can do. But he also is very disabled by his autism and his anxiety. He has a hard time leaving his house and traveling sometimes. But this is his incredible gift. And of course, he commissions. If you have your pet and you want Casey to do your pet, of course, you can send him a photo. And this is how we're trying to help support them and get the word out about them so that they can have, you know, of course, financial autonomy and stuff like that, because this is, you know, this is his livelihood. I wanted to show you Stephen Wiltshire. So he's another person coming to our event. So here's a video of Stephen flying over the city of New York in a helicopter. And what he does is he flies over the cities for 30, 45 minutes, and then he spends the next several days drawing the city from memory. So I'll just let it play for about a minute here so you can get an idea.
I am Annette Wiltshire, and I am sister to Stephen Wiltshire. It's great to be here and be able to watch Stephen in the Empire State, drawing the Empire State. It's a great accomplishment for him. And as his sister, I'm really pleased that he's doing something that he's really very passionate about. He can memorize the city so well. But you have to remember, Stephen's been to New York quite a few times, well over 8-9 times. So his memory of the skyline is still the same. It's just adapting to the new buildings that are now added to the skyline. I mean, that's still quite a remarkable thing to have and be able to hold that memory.
So by the end of it, he has a 4-meter wide canvas. He's memorized all the buildings, windows, trees, Central Park. He lays it out. He's not referring to a photo during this. He's doing this all, downloading this from his brain. He is
incredible what we're able to do with our brain.
It's unbelievable. Now, he has autism himself. He has, again, he's very dependent on his sister to navigate through the world, but they have discovered this gift. And through this gift, he has flown all over the world and done these pieces. Now, his picture of the New York skyline is hanging permanently in the Empire State Building, which is his favorite building. We do have him coming next month to Wisconsin. He's going to do a flyover of Milwaukee, where I live. I couldn't be more ecstatic about it. And we're going to have him working on the piece here. And we'll, of course, show that off at our event, too. But he's just a one of a kind. So he was actually knighted by the King of England for his contributions to arts and culture. And so it's just a testament to, you know, not being stuck by your barriers and rising above it. We have another young boy who has very limited language skills, but he draws these remarkable animals with beautiful sense of color. So first of all, notice how he holds the pencils, right? And he sits there and he has his phone playing children's music or children's videos usually, and he draws these things. And his, you know, his sense of color is just so fascinating, and it speaks to how he might see the world around him. You know, he starts with a blank canvas, and he just pumps these things out. So it's just that is his gift. He's going to be here. We also have Ping Lian Leek. Now, this is again, almost completely nonverbal man who lives in Australia. Here's his rendition of the Sydney Opera House in the Australian skyline. And you can just, it's their own unique style, right? It's completely unique to them. It's completely original. And here's how he draws some animals and stuff. And it's a reflection of how maybe they perceive the world. So we have, about 20 of these individuals coming together. They've never met each other before. They've never seen each other. And the parents, of course, are going to have a chance to talk and support one another too. How did you navigate this? How did you navigate that? Because they all face huge barriers in their lives too. And we're also going to have several of the acquired savants who gain musical and artistic skills after brain injuries. And they'll be able to relate. Last year when they met, it was like magic was in the air because they could really they had a shared experience that they were able to grow from, and now they have a sense of community, of family around it, and they stay in touch with each other, and they help one another. So it's a remarkable, you know, people say, why do you spend so much time, Dr. Chapman, thinking about just such a small number of people? But the real reason is because it teaches us something about all of our brains. And Dr. Treffert said, we can never fully understand the human brain until we can explain the mystery of savant syndrome. And there's just so much to fully understand there. And again, it's like, to me, when I meet these people, I just feel a restored faith in the beauty of humankind, you know, and of our bodies.
That's a very, very interesting concept also, how the brain is able to access these parts that research even hasn't been able to.
No, we have not fully articulated what's going on there. We have theories. We know that the brain has so many connections in it, you know, that we don't use on a day-to-day basis. And the thought that as we learn, here's another example for you. So the Japanese language, I lived in Japan for a year. That was my language I took in school. So they have, they don't have a different R and L. They have one syllable that's kind of the half R and half L sound. Japanese babies can perceive the difference between an R and an L. But as they grow up and they get acculturated into their culture and they learn their language, their brain no longer needs to distinguish those two things because there's not two different sounds. So it loses the ability to do that. But what that tells us is that we're born with a much wider capacity for perception than we end up with. And the amount of brain space that it takes, you know, to memorize all the words and phrases and linguistic rules. And like I said, the nonverbal communication skills, the number of connections it takes to do that might be comparable to the number of neurons it would take for Stephen Wiltshire to recall the entire skyline of New York City, right? He's using his brain in a different way. But I think it's simultaneously the mystery of how it works and just the true beauty to take it in and just wonder, how is this possible? And why do more people not know about these individuals? You know, that each one of them has a dream that they want to fulfill. Grant wants to sell his books and he wants to make a cartoon out of his characters. Casey wants to sell his artwork. Of course, the piano players, they want to book gigs and they want to have specific jobs. And so if we keep telling their stories and exposing them, we can help them. But I know there are other people watching this podcast right now who might say, gosh, I never thought about sitting my child down in front of different musical instruments and artwork. Or maybe my child has a special gift, but I don't know how to cultivate it. Should I send them to mainstream school? Should I find them a tutor? Should I get them more materials? And that's where we can provide a lot of guidance at the Truffert Center to folks, and so they can reach out to us. The other thing that we're doing is we're developing a evaluation protocol. So you talked about research. We're making a system by system way of evaluating someone's gifts and the extent of their gifts, so they can sit down with us and we have melody that we play and we say, how many notes can this person hear and replicate them immediately? Or how complex of a drawing can they see and then reproduce it? Can they remember certain aspects of it? How many digits of pi can they memorize? You know, all these different types of skills, because we want to understand the extent of their gifts so that we can fully support them in leveraging those gifts in their life. So it's kind of the first ever comprehensive savant evaluation protocol. And we're currently in the development stages of that, which we're super excited about too, of course.
Jeremy, are some of the people with savant syndrome be able to communicate how they perceive the world and how they perceive people, let's say, with not these specific skills? If I sit next to someone and start playing the piano, not even being able to hit one note correctly, would they think I'm stupid?
No, you know, the thing is, it comes naturally to them. It doesn't even always occur to them how they do it. And many of them, if you ask them, how are you doing this? I don't know. I just know it. I just remember it. It just happens. One other individual I'll share with you as we wrap up here is an individual named Daniel Tammet. This is another Londoner here who has autism, and he's in his 40s now. Now, he's pretty high functioning, so to speak. He can articulate his thoughts. He's very, very, very well spoken. And he has the record currently for digits of the number pi memorized. I think it's 20,000 something. And he, of course, has savant syndrome. He has a variety of different skills. And he has synesthesia, where he has an overlap between his senses. So the number 7 evokes a certain color for him. And the letter B evokes a certain color or sound. And he says that his synesthesia is part of how he remembers things. But he has written books about how his brain works, and he's pretty well versed in how it is. So he's a special gift to us insofar as he can help maybe tell us a little bit more about, you know, how this all works. I've recently reached out to him and gotten in touch with him, so I plan to do that a little bit more. One other person is Temple Grandin. Now, this is someone who's another one of the more famous people with autism. She is an American. She is now a professor of, and she's an inventor of livestock equipment for farmers. So ways for them to humanely have the cows kind of go through their lives, basically. And she sees the world through their eyes. And there's a movie about her called Temple Grandin that you can really understand how she was overwhelmed as a child, how the sounds of the world were just too much for her. And she learns to soothe herself in certain ways. And she realized that she could see the world the way animals do. And she's written several books about this, about the autistic brain and how to encourage your children to get exposed to things. So she's a friend of ours too. And we try to learn as much as we can about them.
Thank you so much, Jeremy, for sharing more about the Savant syndrome. And your event sounds wonderful.
I'm very grateful. I'm very lucky to have, a lot of things just fell into place, and I have the coolest job in the world, and I love sharing it with people. So thank you. Thank you for giving me a chance to give all these people a platform, and I'll follow up with links and all that stuff.
Thank you so much for being on my podcast, Real, Raw, and Authentic. Do not forget to like, subscribe, and share this episode with someone who might want to listen to this. See you in the next episode, wherever that's gonna be.
Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get 2 2.5 quart or 3 quart mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.